Hey guys, a somber start to this episode of Growcast. Friend of the show and world-famous breeder Subcool has passed away. Apparently he had some health issues, and he passed away yesterday. And he's a good friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. Just wanted to send my condolences to all his loved ones and say rest in peace, Subcool. I'll be putting together both of his episodes back-to-back, ad-free, and releasing them tomorrow as a bonus episode in memoriam of Subcool. So thanks for coming on the show, buddy. I hope you're resting in peace. Okay. Change gears from the sad thoughts. Sad but inevitable thoughts. Today's episode is with Dr. Coco. Yes, Dr. Coco is back. We love talking with Dr. Coco and all the wonderful information he shares with my growing audience. Before we get started, quick reminder, if you want to get your hands on some free seeds from Purple Caper Seeds, fantastic genetics company, just go to growcastpodcast.com/giveaway and sign up, because we are doing a drawing this Wednesday, and we're giving away a couple of packs of free genetics. Very, very fine genetics, folks. Go get your hands on them. Before we jump into today's episode with Dr. Coco, let's give some love to Newt Tools, one of my favorite partners. Just go to newttools.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off for listening to this show. And members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off newttools.com. Newt Tools invented the Newt Needle, which is an amazingly simple device which allows you to precisely measure your nutrients without ever wasting a single drop. It's comprised of a 100-milliliter syringe and a 14-inch stainless steel tube. It fits perfectly into any bottled nutrient and allows you to extract exactly what you need, no spilling, no slopping, and then apply it to your reservoir slowly and evenly and mix it in well. It's really a handy device. No more sloshing nutrients and staining your clothes. No more wasted newts on the floor. NewtTools.com, promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. MyGrowPass.com for 25% off. Okay, everyone, shout out to our new sponsor, Diamond Cut Co. You'll hear about them later. Very excited about that. Lots of great stuff going on with the program. But for now, let's just jump into today's show with Dr. Coco. Thanks for listening and enjoy the program. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please share Growcast with a friend, with a grower, someone you think would enjoy the show. We appreciate the grassroots growth. Folks, appreciate that. And also check out the Homegrown Helpers with Rob Smith for more cannabis talk, and the Coffee Health and Science podcast, my other show, recently featuring Growcast guests such as Joshua Rutherford, Mary Beth Sanchez, and a whole host of other very interesting guests. Check it out. Appreciate you guys. Today we have the powerful Dr. Coco back on the line. What's up, Dr. Coco?
Hey, Jordan. How's it going?
Going excellent, my friend. Always appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to help my audience deepen their understanding of all things cannabis. Thank you for joining us today, my friend.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to come on, Jordan.
So today we're talking about lights. This is something that we've talked about in the past a little bit. We've touched on it, but you're really deep into the science, specifically when it comes to cannabis and lighting. Is that a fair assessment, Dr. Coco? You've been deep in this for the past few weeks.
Yeah. My partner and I, Dr. Photon, have been working on a series of articles to really dive deep into the science of horticultural lighting. You know, I mean, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of different numbers. A lot of manufacturers try to make different claims about equivalency and things like that. And it can just be sort of a mess. So to really try to help growers understand horticultural lighting, to understand the metrics that you need to be able to, you know, fairly and accurately compare different lights and really know what you're looking for. So we tried to set out to answer some of the most sort of pressing and important questions about how to compare and evaluate grow lights and how much light you really need in a grow tent.
And that's what we're going to dive into today. I'm excited to explore lighting metrics and all those things with Dr. Coco. But first, let's shout out cocoforcannabis.com. You got these articles up about lighting. You've got the New Year's Grow Challenge going. You got a new grow challenge coming up for April. Give me a quick rundown of what you've been up to.
Yeah. Things are going great over at Coco for Cannabis. You know, we specialize in the science and practice of growing cannabis. So my partner and I, Dr. Photon, work on articles. We try to address a lot of questions that are out there in the growing community that often there just aren't really good answers to. So like the lighting articles we'll get into today. But yeah, we have a great community. We have a live chat room that, you know, people can come by and ask questions and get help from our community. We have a cool growers forum, cool grow journals, and yeah, we do the challenge grows. So right now we have the New Year's Grow Challenge going on. Over 400 growers signed up for this, and over 200 are keeping active journals in the forum. And it's just a ton of fun. We all germinated on New Year's Day. You know, our plants are about 1 month old now. Some growers are starting to flip to flowering, and others are finishing out their veg. The auto flowers are starting to show their pistils, and nice. It's an exciting time. You can sort of cruise through the New Year's Grow Challenge journals, and it's just fun to see how everybody sort of compares and how they're doing at this age. That's cool. And we're just gearing up for the next challenge grow, which is the Spring Auto Flower Challenge. It starts on April 20th, which is 4/20. Sort of timed well to we should just be done. Everybody should be done with the New Year's Grow Challenge grows and able to start their plants up for the Spring Auto Flower Challenge.
Nice.
And this year we're doing I'm excited you're going to be joining us on that. It should be a lot of fun. We're setting it up now. We're going to start signups at the end of this week. So probably on Friday, maybe Saturday, but hopefully by Friday. The sign-up form will be live, and I'll start getting, you know, everybody registered. And we're going to do different breeder groups. So we're going to have a few different designated groups for some breeders, Dutch Passion, Fast Buds, Mephisto. And we're going to have like an other breeder category for auto flowers. And we're also going to have a photo period group. So if you want to keep growing your photos, you can grow alongside. I think it's really interesting to see how the photo period group stacks up to all the different growers growing auto flowers.
Nice. I'm glad you're including them too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to include everybody. But you know, if you haven't grown auto flowers, if you're thinking about growing auto flowers, if you've always sort of wondered what it was like or what it's all about, this is a really cool opportunity to grow auto flowers, see what can be done with them, see what kind of training we're able to pull off, and to see what the difference is between the different strains and the different breeders. I think it's going to be really interesting to sort of group all the Mephistos together and see how those plants do compared to like all the Dutch Passion auto flowers.
That's what I was just going to say. You get to kind of see it meta, like see it as a whole under all the different growing styles. And it's definitely not like, you know, like a surefire case study or whatever, but I think it'll tell you a lot of interesting information. I think it'll help growers,
you know,
decide for themselves.
Yeah. A lot of statistics is just about sample size, right? And so when you start getting hundreds of growers doing something, it becomes, you know, a much more reliable form of data.
Totally.
So if you're on Instagram and you see one person growing Mephisto plants and they look fire, you know, it's different than if you come to a forum and you see like 50 people growing them, and they're all better than the other 50 people that are growing this other one or not. I mean, who knows what's going to turn up there, but I think that those kinds of samples, you can be much more confident that you're not just seeing, you know, grower talent.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to that. Everybody check it out. Coco4cannabis.com.
Yeah, come on over and visit us.
But today is all about lighting. So excited to talk about lighting. And here's why, Dr. Coco. I love these explorations that we've done on my show, the really kind of niche explorations. Having Kevin from Black Dog LEDs, you know, talking about manufacturing. Having Shane from Migro, one of our favorite guests, talk about testing lights. You know what I mean? And I think that we're all familiar. We all get excited when Shane says, oh, they said it was this much PAR and it was only this much PAR. And it was, and I think that's what we all get excited about because we know that is in fact a measurement. But I think a lot of people, including me, don't fully understand what those measurements really entail, what they really mean. Not just that they are a number that needs to be this high. So I want to dive into, you know, what all of this means and specifically when it comes to lighting metrics. Does that sound good?
That sounds perfect. Yeah, I think that it's a really important topic. I think that, you know, if you're evaluating different grow lights, if you're really trying to optimize your grow space and figure out what you need, you need to sort of understand light. And, you know, far too often people are still using wattage to measure light. And wattage is not an accurate measurement of light. I mean, it never really was.
Right.
But yeah, we need to, it worked sort of okay as long as you were just using HBA or HBS and metal highlight and you know, even ceramic metal highlight lamps. But with LEDs, using wattage is just sort of a farce. And you need to be able to get in and sort of better understand those PPF and PPFD numbers in particular. And the difference between those is really important for actually evaluating pro lights.
I think I'd actually like to stop and drill down there and explain why it is, why I believe what it is. Sorry, let me rephrase that. I'd like to drill down on what I think of what you just said, and then you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. When you're talking about the wattage, you're talking about the power delivery. And so when you say that's applicable to the HID lighting, is that because it just is that simple? You're running that amount of wattage into the ballast, into the filament, and it produces X amount of light, whereas LEDs, it depends on the microchip that it's made from and all the different components. Really, that's what determines the ultimate output?
With LEDs, it's a number of things. Yes.
Okay.
You're basically right. With the HID lights, the high intensity discharge lights, that's HPS, MH, CMH. All of those lights convert energy into PAR at about the same rate.
I see.
Not exactly the same rate, but at close enough that wattage becomes an acceptable proxy. It's actually, I mean, if you're comparing like a 400 watt HPS with a 1000 watt double-ended HPS, the difference in efficiency is actually pretty significant there. But, you know, for years, the sort of standard was that, you know, 1000 watt HPS, and that converts electricity into usable light at about 1.6 umols per watt, 1.5, 1.6 umols per watt. You know, a double-ended fixture can get higher than that, 1.7, a 400 watts, so the smaller light fixtures are less than that. But they're all in about that range. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to, or it just became sort of a shortcut to talk just about the wattage.
Yeah, and it's a more accurate assessment.
The wattage was an accurate reflection of how much light was produced.
Right.
And of course, then it became so common to think about wattage, both for how much light you need and for sort of evaluating harvests and things like that, that LED manufacturers just started trying to
slap wattage
equivalent wattages, or like, and that is just a marketing scam. There's never been any sort of scientific principles behind how they establish those equivalent wattages, and they're all like grossly inflated. Well, not all of them. There are some decent manufacturers that actually tell you the truth, but most manufacturers grossly inflate the HID light equivalency. And when you actually measure the PAR in PPF in photosynthetic photon flux, then you can see that those fixtures, that they'll tell you this LED light only draws 100 watts and it replaces a 400 watt HPS or something like that, right? You've seen things like that before, right? When you actually compare them and you see how much light that the fixtures really create, you see that it comes up to like, you know, maybe 100 watts of HPS lighting, which is what it pretty much draws from the wall. For a long time, and you know, growers thought since pretty much they launched that LED lights saved electricity over HID lights, and that really wasn't true for quite a long time because the HID lights were more efficient. So you might be using less electricity, but you're also going to be growing far smaller harvests if you're actually using less electricity.
Wow.
So yeah, like we were talking about, the HID lights on average, we can say get 1.5 micromoles per watt. Some of the cheap LED lights, some of the cheap Blurple LED lights that are still sold, they get one or like less than one micromoles per watt. So they're significantly less efficient than the HID lighting and actually creating the kind of light that we need for growing cannabis and delivering that to the plants.
Wow, that's eye-opening. Now, would you say that advancements have tipped that scale with some of the higher-end lights?
Oh, yeah. Not even the higher-end lights. The higher end lights have been beating HID lights for some years now. Yeah. So the more expensive LED lights started, passing the 1.5, 1.6. They're up now in the high twos. The good LED lights or the top of the line LED lights, you can find them above 2.5 now, which is, nearly double what some of the HPS lights get. The really exciting thing that's happened just in the last year or so in the LED market, though, is that there are sort of affordable options now that beat HID lighting.
Right.
That beat it in terms of efficiency. And this is one of the points that we make in these articles. And we really sort of evaluate the efficiency of the LED lights versus the efficiency of the HID lights and the cost. So now, just because we've been tossing these numbers around, we're getting, entry level LEDs that are available that are pushing two micromoles per watt.
Right.
Which is significantly more efficient than, the HID lighting. It's twice as efficient as some of the lower end blurable lights. So, at this point,
really a wide variety.
You are saving electricity quite considerably over a run now if you're using some of these some of the newer fixtures. And when we go through that, I show we compare specific brands and models and try to break down, because there are still crappy LEDs available, and the manufacturers are still trying to convince you that they're sort of more powerful than they really are.
Right. Yeah. That seems to be the case. And like I said, Shane from Migro, that's why people love his channel, is he does, his comprehensive tests. He measures these things.
Shout out to him, man. We use his data in our calculations.
Yeah, he's
great.
We
use his data in some of the charts and the how to evaluate and compare grow lights for cannabis article that I'm talking about now. We use his data for a couple of the fixtures. When we have it, we prefer the Migros field tested data, the field measured PPF, over the manufacturer's calculations for sort of obvious reasons. However, we adjust both values. So we actually adjust Migros figures up because we have known examples of his testing against true PPF testing that shows there's about a 15% fall off there, which is what you'd expect from field measurement data. So the numbers that Migro reports are a little bit under what we think the true measurement of PPF is from the different fixtures.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And yeah, we talk about that and sort of why we make those adjustments. Basically, let's get into PPF here a little bit.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, why don't we talk about the specific metrics here? Because we're right there.
Yeah, PPF is photosynthetic photon flux. And it's a measure of the amount of light that a fixture can deliver to the canopy of your grow, basically. So the total amount of light that's going to be sort of usable by you in the tent. And that's really the number. When you're looking at a light fixture, the total PPF number is like the most important single metric of that light.
In terms of, break it down for me really lay. Like, are we talking quality? Are we talking quantity, output?
You're talking quantity of light. So quantity. That PPF is the total quantity of light that the fixture will produce.
Okay.
There's three different ways that measurement is taken. So manufacturers calculate PPF, and they arrive at a calculated value. And that's just based on the chips that are used in manufacture. And they basically just add up the theoretical PPF of all of the different chips and, give you the sum as the PPF of the fixture.
Ah, I see.
But that's an obvious overestimate of what the real PPF is going to be, the true PPF, right? Because there's efficiency losses, there's issues with design build and other things like
whole
that.
Whole myriad of factors. It's like building a car and the engine and build out,
right,
and you say
right,
it has
right.
this many horsepower, but you haven't tested it. I get that.
Right. You actually have to put it on the machine and test the horsepower that it's actually putting out, right? So when the manufacturers calculate PPF, and pretty much all manufacturers report calculated values.
Oh, wow.
That's an overestimation, right? Because you're not going to get 100% efficiency. And so based on known examples of that, we make an adjustment to those calculated values if you're sort of using calculated values. The most common measurement of PPF is a field measurement. And that's what Migro does. That's using a fairly simple sensor, taking a measurement in a situation that either is or simulates the grow conditions, right? So he puts up little reflector walls to simulate a grow tent space and takes that measurement of sort of how much light's being produced.
Right.
Those measurements, the problem is, different testers, how they set up those walls, how they sort of, you know, set up the reflection, the distance, the meter that they're using.
Yeah, he's talked about it on our show. Yeah, they're a little bit different.
Yeah, they're all going to be a little bit different. So we only use field measurement data from Migro. It's sort of the largest data supply
that's so cool.
Data bank of it. Yeah, and it's too tough to try to compare to understand what that conversion would be across different testers. But we have enough from Migro to sort of see the error rate and to measure that against true PPF. Now, true PPF, you use really sophisticated laboratory equipment that redirects all the light to one sensor and gives you sort of the best measurement of PPF. That's a true measurement of PPF. And with LED fixtures, it's extremely expensive to get that testing done. So very few LED fixtures have ever had the benefit of sort of having the true PPF measurement taken like that. But that's the number that really matters to us. And that's the number that we really want to care about as growers, is the true PPF, not sort of an underestimate from a field measurement and not an overestimate from a manufacturer's calculation, right? So what we're trying to do, and this is the first time we've seen sort of an attempt to do this, at least online, is to convert all of these values. So we developed some simple algorithms to try to convert field measurement and calculated values to what we call estimated true PPF.
Nice.
So we adjust Migro's numbers up, we knock manufacturers' calculated rates down, and that gives us sort of numbers that we can more fairly compare across different fixtures.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right? Because it's totally unfair to be comparing like a calculated value of one fixture to Migro's field measurement of another fixture.
Yeah, good point.
Because they're going to be off by 30, 40% just because of the way that they're measured. Right? So we try to make those adjustments, and you know, we refine that formula that we do use to do that, and now we have it. So if you have both calculated value and a field measurement value, you'll arrive, using the algorithm that we made, you'll arrive at really close to the same number, regardless of sort of which one you start with. So that gave us confidence that we're at least getting a comparable number, even if it's not totally spot on what true PPF is. Mm-hmm. I think it's a better way to measure and compare grow lights than using either of the other measures.
That's really cool that you're combining data pools though, and like working out these types of algorithms. I truly feel like you're doing the Lord's work for the community. You know what I mean? I'm glad there's someone out there doing this, is what I'm saying.
I'm sort of foreshadowing the next thing. So the two articles, I launched three articles last week. One's just a grow tents and harvest sizes that sort of goes through, you know, we think when you're setting up a grow, the first thing you should think about is how much do you want to harvest, because that sort of sets the size of the grow and everything else kind of follows from there.
Sure.
So that was the first article. And then the second two articles are both on lighting, how to evaluate and compare grow lights for cannabis, which gets into a lot of these conversions. We have a big chart there of different high-intensity discharge lights and their efficiencies, and the different LED fixtures and their efficiencies. So you can sort of easily compare both the cost efficiency and the what we call the photon efficiency, how efficient it is at converting electricity into light. And then we did the you know, how much light do you need article, which really dives into cannabis photosynthesis to figure out how much light plants can use and sort of arriving at the right metrics to determine the amount of light you need for your space. Mm-hmm. We have another tool that's going to come maybe at the end of this week or at the end of next week, which I'm even sort of more excited about. And I'm kind of foreshadowing here with some of my comments, but that's our grow light calculator. And the grow light calculator, you're going to be able to take data from any grow light. If you get it from Megro, you can import that. If you get it from a manufacturer, you can tell us that it's the manufacturer's data, and enter that into our calculator, and we will calculate the cost efficiency, the photon efficiency, the coverage area, and the estimated harvest of that fixture.
Damn, that's a useful tool, man.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about the grow light calculator. And you'll be able to then take that data. If you have a bunch of different sort of fixtures to compare or to think about, you can plug it in, you hit the compare button, and it adds it to a chart. And you can just keep adding new lights to the chart, and you'll be able to print that chart and, you know, be able to compare and really see what the best light is. And I think it's going to be a useful tool, because if you go to Amazon and you just try to like read through the product descriptions, you're going to be misled.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to go sort of armed and be able to make these comparisons and be able to compare lights that are measured in different ways like that. So I'm really excited about it. We're working hard at it. We've got the algorithms all tested out. It's really just a matter of design and development work on the website for that at this point. But those things always take longer than I expect them to. Should be soon, though.
Well, I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Quick reminder before we get into the mid-roll here. The GrowCast Listener Ask Me Anything live stream is coming up this Saturday, February 8th. Noon in the East, 9 a.m. in the West. And to get in on the action, just hit the link in our bio on Instagram or go to growcastpodcast.com/AMA. You got to sign up to get in on it. And we'd love to see you there. Talk to you guys live. Answer all your questions. Wolfman's going to be there. Rob's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Rich is going to be there. It's going to be a ton of fun. Go sign up now. growcastpodcast.com/AMA. Get it before it fills up. Before we jump back in with Dr. Coco, let's give some love to a brand new partner, everybody. Diamond Cut Co. You've heard of Diamond Cut Co. Just go to diamondcutco.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off. Members of mygrowpass.com get 20% off. And they're giving away a bunch of scissors to our members. Really, really excited about this new partnership. Diamond Cut Co. is committed to supporting the hardworking trim teams and individual trimmers across the world. With innovative styles and designs, they cater to the connoisseur and focus their premium products exclusively for our growing community. Made for growers, by growers, we love it. Danny Danko supports them. In his article, Grow Gear, 4 Must-Have Items, he included Diamond Cut Co. So you got to check it out today. If you need some new scissors, if you need some additional scissors, if you're not happy with your scissors, diamondcutco.com. Promo code GROWCAST for 10% off just for being a listener of this wonderful program. MyGrowPass.com members receiving 20% off their Diamond Cut Co. Diamond Cut Co, everybody. Go and get one today. All right, let's get back with Dr. Coco. I want to talk cobs. I want to talk about what you think about, you know, the hype surrounding cobs. Now, quantum boards are there's so much advancement, man. This is happening so quickly. But why don't we start with explaining what cobs are, what you think of them, how they differ?
Yeah, so cobs are chip-on-board technology. That's sort of one of the main ways that LEDs are made. The difference is the SMD style, which is a surface-mounted device. Cobs, a lot of growers got the impression that cobs were sort of much more efficient than surface-mounted devices. And it's tough. The individual chips that are used in a cob are more efficient than the individual chips that are used in SMD. Mm-hmm. However, the way that the cob comes together as a fixture is less efficient at managing heat often.
Oh, wow.
So it can have to be run at lower wattages and be a less efficient overall fixture. So there's reasons to be attracted to comms. Comms are often easier for DIY fixtures, for do-it-yourself sort of setup fixtures, and for being able to like design your own lights and getting a cob kit for that. They're also cheaper in certain parts of the manufacturing process. So for some lighting applications, manufacturers are able to save some costs, which may be helpful in other things. You might be able to get sort of a light at a price point that you want because they save some money on the cob manufacturer style.
Interesting.
But they're not, as sort of a blanket rule, they're not more or less efficient than SMD fixtures. And so it's really important. This is sort of the same issue with the manufacturer's calculated values. You need to, you know, the sum is sometimes not equal to all of its parts.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So you need to be able to measure the full fixture and sort of what the overall efficiency is, what the PPF is, so how much total light and how much electricity is required to produce that total amount of light. And that's on a fixture by fixture basis, but we're not opposed to comms or sort of big advocates of comms. I think that there's, a role for them in horticultural lighting, but they're certainly not the panacea, and they're certainly not necessarily an efficiency gain over the SMD devices.
I think you're dispelling some misconceptions, because that's kind of Cobbs really were for a minute there what everyone was talking about in all the LED forums and stuff like that. And now I see quantum boards.
Well, what they're talking about now is quantum boards.
That's what I was just going to say. Right? That kind of got replaced very quickly, I found, and people are having very good success with these lights.
Yeah, quantum boards is where it's at, man. All the LED fixtures at the sort of entry level that we recommend are quantum boards, or quantum board style. Really, you know, quantum board is a brand name used by the Horticultural Lighting Group, HLG, but they don't have exclusivity to it. So other companies are also using this quantum board name. The technology is really just a printed circuit board. And
I never really understood that until just now. It's just like an exposed circuit board.
It's just a printed circuit board that has LED chips mounted directly to it. The circuit board itself then dissipates the heat and sort of distributes the heat out. So it's totally passively cooled. The chips are spaced far enough apart that they don't create thermal runaway events. And it's, it's an exciting sort of style. It's the printed circuit board style, which everybody knows is quantum board. So that's the same thing. They're what made high efficiency LEDs available at competitive price points.
So
I mean, that's basically it. So the sort of the fixtures that we recommend that now are getting, you know, 1.85, 1.9, 2.0, micromoles per watt are all printed circuit board designs. It's a really streamlined design. You don't have a lot of components. There's no fans. All of that sort of makes it a more elegant design, I think, but it also saves a lot in manufacturing costs. It lowers the electrical use a little bit as well, which also helps with the efficiency rating. They're able to distribute the light really well because they spread the light out over a really big surface area. I use the Mars Hydro TSL 2000s now, which are one of our recommended lights. We rate it for a 2 foot by 4 foot area. The damn fixture is about 2 feet by 4 feet. no doubt it goes wall to wall in my 4 foot tent. So it's distributing that light by like physically being in all of those places, right? Mm. Like the light is directly above the plant, like everywhere in that space. And it runs right up against my reflective walls in the tent and just creates sort of the perfect PAR environment for plants. Nice. So yeah, it's an exciting technology, and it really is sort of what has been, I mean, it's been a game changer to the home grow LED market.
Well,
and
I
think everybody should be thinking about that. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about UV. It comes up quite a bit on my show. I know that we should be concerned about certain types of UV. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, yeah, certain types of UVC is really dangerous. We're less concerned. I think that in Spectrum overall, and this is an important thing, in Spectrum overall, I think we're less concerned than most growers are about sort of hitting all these different spectrums within the grow them. Certainly then like sort of the misconceptions about like the blurple spectrum, but even the UV lights, there's reasons to use them, I think mainly for non-photosynthetic reasons, right? So you're outside the PAR wavelengths when you're getting into ultraviolet radiation. It can be used for certain forms of sanitation, and it can potentially stimulate some secondary photosynthetic characteristics and potentially increase harvest,
right?
Increase cannabinoid profiles. It's dangerous stuff if you're using it, depending on what you're going with. And you know, there's similar issues with the infrared spectrum at the other end of this. That's a deeper sort of issues into spectrum. We're actually going to work on Photon's working on a piece on spectrum right now. And that's going to be it's going to be an issue to get into. We're not really sure where to put it. We've split these light articles. I think there's some things to think about with spectrum, but for the RSpec, for example, with the HLG lights, we don't recommend the RSpec that is there for the infrared spectrum. Photon doesn't think it's worth it.
Whoa.
He's looked into that, and he thinks that for the electrical consumption and for the added cost, that it's hard to see what the return is.
I like that take.
And so I'm kind of hedging around this because I want to get deeper into these spectrum issues. I know he's working on that. We've talked more about the infrared lately than we have about the UV.
Well,
but I like
to
sort of follow Photon on these issues. I don't like to get too far out.
No, that's good.
Lighting issues.
That's good stuff, man. It's just something that came up. You know, it even came up when Rod Brady was talking about CMHs. And, you know, Wolfman comes on the show and he jokes all the time. His eyes are fried, man, because he didn't take care of his eyes in the grow room. And, you know, some people say to wear long sleeves and stuff. It's like, maybe we should start thinking about this if we're going to be spending all this time on
it. It is. If especially if you're using certain forms of UV light, you can't go in there if you are. Although there's differences between UVB and UVC lighting and sort of what the applications are for them. I definitely think that this could be a whole show.
Totally.
And, let's come back to that. I also think that we're not going to convince growers about CMH lights until we sort of get deeper into these issues of spectrum, because growers still are sort of convinced that CMH is where it's at. And the only argument that they can really make anymore is spectrum. I actually point this out in one of the articles comparing the small carbon metal halide fixtures, like a 315 watt CMH light, compares approximately to the light that I run, the Mars Hydro TSL 2000. But the ceramic metal halide costs more, it uses more electricity, and it produces less PAR, less light. So the argument still to be made for CMH, or the argument that is still made for CMH lights in particular, is that it offers a better spectrum. Endorse that, but we're not fully. I'm not fully sort of prepped to take on that.
That's all right, man. We're gonna dive into that in a future episode. You did say though, you did touch on blurple lights, and I want to talk about this, and I want to phrase it in a specific question. I am convinced at this point that, you know, listen, we've come so far. There's been so many advancements. Lots of people crap on these Blurple lights. I understand why. Shane has the picture on, you know, with the thumbs down on the Viper Spectra. Why is it that some growers do good with those? Is that just a matter of them having everything else dialed in on their grow?
And maybe I use Blurple lights. Yeah. So full disclosure here, I used Blurple lights until fairly recently, and had great results with them. Yeah, you can do as well as sort of could be expected from Blurple lights, but they're not particularly efficient, and they do produce an inferior spectrum. You know, there's this idea in the cannabis growing community, and I think this is mainly more because of marketing, that Blurple was made Blurple because that was like based on photosynthesis and what wavelengths right. are better for plants or whatever. That's more marketing than science. The reason that they made Blurple lights red and blue were because the early generation LED chips were much more efficient in the red and blue wavelengths.
Right.
They didn't have efficient LED chips in full spectrum or in other wavelengths.
Those were the components that were available at the time. I think Kevin from Black Dog said that exact same thing.
In order to produce LEDs that had any kind of reasonable efficiency, they had to go towards blue and red spectrum light. And that produced this sort of hideous color that plants seem to deal with it fine. Having grown with Blurple lights for a while and having sort of put my harvested product up against others from those lights, I think you can do fine. I don't think that there's a tremendous sort of fall off in terms of harvest quality. If you have other things dialed in within the grow space, like we're talking about.
If you don't, though, you're probably going to struggle. But sorry, finish your thought.
Yeah, no. You're going to struggle sort of regardless of what light.
Also true.
I can be convinced that there are some quality differences between having a full spectrum light. And I think that there may be. But I think that that's sort of the more minor point. I think the major point is the lights are about half as efficient as better LEDs. They're not any cheaper. They're like the same price now, and they're half as efficient. The difference is they seem cheaper because they're actually smaller lights. So you can go and get like a $70 light on Amazon that claims to be, you know, 400 watt HPS equivalent, and it's just not true. When you crunch the numbers, and I show this in one of the articles, when you crunch the numbers, you realize that light is just as expensive as one of the sort of much more efficient LED lights when you do it on a per micromole basis, right? And it's using twice as much electricity to produce that light. Mm-hmm. The only way you're apparently saving money anymore by buying Blurple lights is you have like a smaller price tag, but that's just because you're buying a smaller light.
Right.
Right.
It's like buying half a light.
There's no advantage to Blurple lights right now. I think really the latest generation, the Mars Hydro TS series that we recommend, the HLG lights, even though the HLG lights are a little bit more expensive. They're coming in at the same price points when you do the right sort of price calculation as cheaper LEDs that are doing so much worse. So, if you're running Blurple lights at this point, I think that if they're meeting your harvest goals, then you're fine sort of sticking with them. But, it's worth upgrading for just the savings in electricity. But if you're setting up a new grow, you know, it's absolutely worth it to invest in a high quality LED fixture. It's really not much more upfront, and you're getting sort of much better light. That's another issue to actually mention here. One of the cool things about these new LED lights is that the smaller ones are some of the most efficient ones. In fact, in many product lines, the smallest unit they make is the most efficient unit in that line. So this offers sort of new growers setting up an awesome opportunity to just buy one small light. And then, you know, as they get to their first harvest, realize their budget may be a little bit looser, they can just buy another of the same light.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And sort of expand their lighting that way. Yeah, and that's really different than the HPS and the CMH lights that, you know, the most efficient units are the giant units. So the most efficient HID light is a 1,000-watt double-ended HPS. But you need a really big space for that.
It's going to be overkill for most home growers.
It's way overkill for most growers. Yeah, exactly. So the difference there is sort of really cool too, because you can start with a small fixture and just sort of, you know, add up to it and end up with a quality lighting system in the end.
Nice. What a great overview of lighting science. Finally, why don't we cap it off? Let's say I got all the money in the world and I'm looking to set up a grow. Like, what do you recommend as far as really high end stuff?
You know, I still personally, I like the Fluence products. Fluence just came out with a light. I think it's
Spider X.
Good testing. I think it's the latest generation of the Spider X. Ah. Photon just sent me some testing reports that had it, I think, at like 2.8 or close to 2.8 micromoles per watt. So
if you had all the money, that's the one
really
you go
impressive.
With.
I think that's the one I'd go with. I was talking to Photon about this, though. He really likes the next, like, Mega. And I was asking him, I'm like, but in Migros testing, it didn't do as well. But he thinks that's more an issue of the way that light design matched up with Migros testing protocols.
Oh, interesting. Nice tease.
Yeah. It's one of the lights that you'll notice the biggest discrepancy between calculated values and Migros field tested values.
Oh, damn.
But it's also the light that Photon believes has the best distribution of light available anywhere on the market.
Oh,
so
shit.
So that better distribution of light is making it harder for Migro to get an accurate reading on the overall sort of PPF. Which gives you a little insight into sort of how complex some of that evaluation has to be.
Totally.
We take distribution on most lights. We assume that the distribution is reasonably good for LED fixtures. Not as good as the Nextlight Mega though. And you know, that changes things when you're looking at having a distribution like the Nextlight Mega. You can actually target a lower PPFD than if you're sticking with a light that doesn't distribute as well. A couple of things, just let me toss a little bit
Please.
Of knowledge in here. We're looking, PPFD is the other measurement of light efficiency. Most of the numbers that you see about micromoles, and micromoles, a lot of people call them U-moles. That little U, the funny U before mole, is the abbreviation for micro. So the correct way to say U-mole there, it's not a U, it's a micro. It's a micromole. So PPF measures the total amount of light that will reach the canopy. And PPFD is a measure of the intensity of light at any particular point within a canopy.
Mm.
So you make PPFD measurements to make sure you're not burning your plants with light, right? To make sure that you're not getting too much light. And we explained that in one of these new articles as well, sort of how cannabis photosynthesis works and how carbon dioxide creates a saturation point for light. And that saturation point for light is around 500 to 700 micromoles of PPFD, of the intensity measurement.
Mm-hmm.
So we target, and then above 1,000 micromoles of PPFD, the plant actually starts being damaged. This is assuming sort of normal atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is the limiting factor there. As you get up to 700 micromoles of light intensity, you're sort of maxing out how much carbon dioxide can use to process that light.
Which calls back to our last episode, because usually that's not, like, in your opinion, often that's not the limiting factor there, but that ties in perfectly with our last episode about CO2.
Right. Well, when you do have enough, when you have that really intense light, it's the limiting factor. Right. So you want to target, ideally, we would deliver, 500 micromoles of light to every single spot within the canopy, right? 500 micromoles of PPFD, because that's where cannabis photosynthesis is really most efficient at normal atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide. We have to avoid going over 1,000, because if we go over 1,000, we start to suffer from photoinhibition, and then the plant can actually be damaged. You'll start to notice chlorosis when the plant can't sort of adjust itself and keep up with that. Mm-hmm. So we recommend targeting 700 micromoles. When you're thinking about how much light you need, you should think about 700 micromoles of PPFD, right? That's 700 micromoles of intensity hitting any individual space within there, because that means that at the center it will be still less than 1,000, and at the edges you have the best chance of having at least 500, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to go above 500 because distribution isn't perfect. If you have a light like the Next Light Mega or the Fluent Spider X, the distribution on those lights are so good that you don't have to, you can target a lower PPFD, if that makes sense, for the sort of the overall grow.
Interesting.
So let me take that from intensity into PPF.
Uh-huh.
So if you're thinking I need 700 micromoles of PPFD to optimize sort of the intensity of light, PPFD is PPF per meter squared.
Right. Because you're measuring
so
the density.
So if you need 700 PPFD, that means you need 700 PPF per square meter, which converts to 65 PPF per square foot.
Ah, I see. Interesting.
So you can take your square footage and multiply it by 65 to understand the total PPF, and that's the total amount of light that you need for your grow space. And we actually put together a calculator to sort of do that for you. And that was launched with our how much light do you need article. So our new grow space calculator is really cool. You can enter in any dimensions. You can say I'm growing in 15 centimeters by 15 centimeters. I'm actually gonna run the numbers on that, see what that would be, pretty small. And measure that, or 4 foot by 4 foot, or, what if I had 100 meters by 100 meters, and you can sort of calculate how much light you would need, and what the harvest size would be for any possible grow space.
That's cool.
And we provide all three numbers that I had talked about earlier. So in that calculator, we give you the calculated value. So if you're looking at the manufacturer's specs in buying these lights, you need a calculated value that adds up to this, which is a higher number. We tell you the sort of estimated true number, and that's based on cannabis photosynthesis and how much light cannabis plants can actually process, like we're talking about.
Yeah, this is cool.
And
I'm looking at the chart right now.
We give you a field measurement estimate, which, if you're looking at Migros data, and trying to decide, how many of these fixtures you would need in your grow space, then you can sort of shoot for that number. Come by, check out that grow space calculator. It's a fun little preview of what our grow light calculator, the grow light calculator. I presented both of these projects to my developers, and they were like, okay, we're going to do the simple one first. So the grow space calculator is already launched. And they're still working on the sort of much more complicated algorithms we put together for that grow light calculator, but that'll be out soon.
Nice. Love it, everybody. CocoForCannabis.com. New articles is where you'll find everything we're talking about. And we're going to follow up with so much. Coco, we still got to do that diagnosing episode. We've been teasing it for 2 months. So let's get that down.
Yes.
Let's do the spectrum.
Diagnosing plant issues. episode. I've gotten all of my notes prepared for that one too, so I'm fired up and ready to do some Venn diagrams. Awesome. I had fun getting into these articles. You know, I've been working on these light articles with Photon ever since New Year's, and it's been sort of a labor of love, but I really enjoy getting into it. We just published them, so I really enjoy sort of having the opportunity to spread the word. And I think, you know, I mean, usually a little bit shy and bragging on the articles, but a lot of this is just coming straight from Photon Stop, and he's brilliant in agriculture and horticultural life.
Nice.
So if he's had a bunch of articles up in his forum for a while, but this is really one of the first efforts that we've made to really go through and edit it up and put it into sort of a really user-friendly format and deliver this sort of really cool scientific insight into lighting to everybody. So I hope everybody can understand these articles and really, you know, come away understanding better what PAR is, what PPF, PPFD, what's the difference, how to sort of, what numbers you should look at when you're looking at a light so that, you know, the manufacturer is not just sort of hoodwinking you. I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and talk about it.
Man, it's a fantastic little set of articles. Everyone needs to check this out when you got some time to peruse. Very, very eye-opening. Loving everything you're doing, Dr. Coco. Thanks so much for taking the time again. We appreciate it.
Awesome, Jordan. Thank you for having me on. And grower love to everybody out there in the Growcast universe.
That's right, everybody. We're wrapping it up. We'll see you next time. This is Dr. Coco and Jordan Rivers signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter. That's our show, folks. Don't forget to register for the upcoming Ask Me Anything live stream this Saturday, February 8th, noon in the East, 9 a.m. in the West. Just go to growcastpodcast.com/AMA. Support the show by going to patreon.com/growcast. You get yourself 2 tickets into our 5K giveaway for every month you support us. And we really appreciate you guys supporting the show. It keeps us going. Shout out to Start to Finish for all your consulting needs. Every situation, every setup, Start to Finish, we've got you covered. And finally, go to growcastpodcast.com/action to see everything that's going on. We got a free veg grow journal up there, purple caper seeds up there, the AMA, donate to Jinx's charity. There's too much to say here, so growcastpodcast.com/action. Thanks to all you growers tuning in. I got to run. Best of luck in your grows, everyone. Happy growing. Bye-bye.